Well, the world is a dumpster fire. Nothing here makes sense. And you vacillate through crippling fear and constant self-defense. And nothing's right and nothing's good. And you're paralyzed with grief. Don't kill yourself, just have a cup of coffee.
Welcome to Coffee Over Suicide, the dramedy podcast about choosing life over death, one cup of coffee at a time. I'm your host, Chris Parker Howard, and I'm talking a little funny. I bit my tongue, and now it's just throbbing there in my mouth, making me say words strangely. So I'm going to try and keep this short. Just so you know, this is not a replacement for any sort of real therapy. If you need it, this is more like getting stuck in a cab with a cab driver for about an hour. And, you know, he's seen some shit. And he might know a few things, but, you know, doesn't always know how to apply them correctly. And isn't necessarily all that gifted of a storyteller, but once in a while says something entertaining. You know, you leave going, that wasn't so bad. You know, I maybe didn't need to tip quite so much, but, you know, what can I say? He was charming. He was charming. Now, today on the show, we have Timmy Lassley, and a little bit more about her in a minute. You know, I started seeing a therapist again, and it was a decision I didn't come to lightly. I was having some dark days. I know I've mentioned it a little bit on the show, and I decided it was time to do something about it. You know, I've only got as many coping mechanisms as I have. It's time to check under the hood and see if maybe there's something else I'm missing. Because I feel like I'm managing my reality about as well as a person can manage their own reality when they've got a situation like this. I've got bipolar. You know, some people call it the happy bipolar, which is the one where it's a lot of fun sometimes because I get the high highs. But those low lows have been lasting for longer and longer lately. Really, really, really fun. You know, you just look over it and think, I wonder what the front of that train smells like. You know what I mean? But of course, you know, you don't do anything about it because you know better. You know yourself, and you know that there's a difference between sadness and depression. But that doesn't make depression any more fun, does it? It's really hard. So I decided I'm going to start seeing somebody. I didn't want to take medication. I struggled with it for a minute, but made a decision. Is it the right one? I don't know. We're going to find out in a little while. And then we'll see. Is all this too much information for you? You know, because you can't spell TMI without Timmy. It's the other way around. That's a bad, bad segue. But you know what's not bad is Timmy Lassley's comedy. You're going to want to go see her as part of the High Plains Comedy Festival. And that's happening August 23rd through the 25th right here in Denver, Colorado. Go get yourself some tickets. You can go see all kinds of great things. There's How Did This Get Made? There's David Cross. And there's Timmy Lassley on the 24th at the High Dive. You ever seen comedy at a punk rock club? If you haven't, put that on your bucket list and then go get it done. I mean, what else are you going to do with your time, right? Go do something cool. Tell people you did a cool thing. I mean, that's really all we have in this life is the amassing of experiences. You can pick stuff up all you want, but man, nothing better than having been somewhere and done something. So go somewhere and do something. Go see Timmy Lassley August 24th. This is a really good conversation. We talk about some things, including a really fun, awkward conversation about me trying to do comedy for the first time here in Denver and offending someone and how I carried that with me for years and finally find out who it is. And now I have to talk to that person. And now that I know who it is, I have some apologizing to do. Let's let this thing roll out. It's a little awkward in places, and that's fine. I kind of left it in because I sort of like that. It's two people who don't know each other very well, so it's bound to get awkward once in a while. But Timmy is delightful, and she's got some really interesting things to say, and she has a very unique personal experience, and I think you're going to love her story. So without further ado, stop listening to me try to talk around my swollen, stupid tongue. Let's talk to Timmy Lassley.
So this episode is brought to you by Latuda.
Oh my god, you should get like, you should get sponsors, like Abilify sponsors a podcast.
Well, you know, I mean, thinking more like, you know, different brands of, you know, whiskey and, you know, things like that.
Just, is that how you
Because
medicate?
It would just be, why not? That's the answer at that point. Not well, so much anymore. It's, for me, I mean, I did that for a while, definitely. But then I learned.
Self-medicate?
Oh, yeah.
I'm still in the throes of that, if I'm being completely honest with myself.
Yeah?
I drink too much, for sure.
Ugh.
Yeah. It's just, you know, it's like one of those habits. It's like sometimes I don't even want to, and I tell myself I'm not going to, but then you go out to a show, and your body's just like on autopilot, and you find yourself at the bar ordering, and then like a Miller Lite is just in your hand all of a sudden. And you're like, what happened here? I had a plan! We had a plan!
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, for me, it was like alcoholism runs in my family. And so I tend to be aware of it as one of those things. It's like I have to actually quit drinking for a while, like once a year, just so I know I still can.
Right.
Because otherwise I'm just going to keep going like a madman.
Yeah, I keep finding reasons to not do that yet. Be like, well, but there's this show, or like, oh, this weekend I'm doing this comedy festival,
yeah.
Or you know, like, oh, a friend's wedding's coming up. Better not stop now.
Well,
better
yeah.
be in fighting shape.
Exactly. I mean, you don't want to miss the fun.
Is that what drinking is all about? It's
well,
just fear
I mean,
of missing out.
Sometimes you do want to miss the fun, and that's why you drink, because
just some FOMO.
Yeah, but well, the other part of that too is that sometimes it'll be. You'll be in the middle of something that's absolutely unbearable, just really boring, and drinking makes everything more fun.
Yeah,
for a while.
Like, find your equilibrium.
There is a
like
window. Don't get me wrong.
You're like, ooh, look at me. I'm all loosey-goosey. Whoa.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Well, I mean, that was the first thing I ever did to combat social anxiety. When I discovered drinking, I discovered I could talk to people. Like, that was it. Like, but I was a person who couldn't go to the grocery store because I might have to talk to somebody. I don't know where that came from. Nobody in my family has anything like that. Nobody taught me that the grocery store was a scary place.
But probably, I mean, I would assume at some point in your life there was a situation that did teach you that.
Maybe.
You know, that like, whether you recognized it in the moment or not, like, somebody was mean to you or like something was scary or
oh no yeah there was a lot of that I mean but that
oh,
was
oh were you bullied
oh my god yeah
ah,
that
I was too
that was a wealth of really good stories.
I was bullied a little bit. I was very lucky in my school situation in that it was like the opposite of a John Hughes stereotypical high school. It didn't like suddenly become worse when you got into high school, you know, the way the 80s taught you that school was or
right.
whatever.
Because there's five people in high school.
Right. And you've got to be one of those.
Right.
No, I grew up in a super small town and we had like five or six different elementary schools and then one middle school, one junior high, one high school.
Mm-hmm.
So for some of these people, I had known them since they were 6 years old, you know, like, and when you spend that much time with someone, whether you like them or not, it's easier to come to accept them.
Yeah.
Like being in a small town, being in a small high school. I think my graduating class was 250. So like,
wow.
Yeah, we started with 400 and then got down to 250 by the time the graduation came around. It tells you a little bit about, you know, the rural place I came from. But
were they just like farm kids that were like,
I mean,
you know,
I was more of a town kid and most of kids were, but like, yeah, it's just, it's a small town, Montrose, Colorado.
Montrose. Okay.
Montrose. I don't know why I always say it. I always want to say it like somebody from the Midwest.
Right.
I'm from Wisconsin. I grew up in Montrose, Colorado.
You know, those accents are really only fun for people who didn't come from areas like that.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Am I culturally appropriating you right now?
No, I come from Michigan, which is basically a combination of Wisconsin and Canada.
Sure.
And so I noticed this the other day when I was listening to some conversations that I had with friends that I'd recorded, like, would you come do this show that I'm doing that I don't know if anyone will come on yet? And one of the things I noticed is I had to brace myself because the conversations would inevitably turn into, so yeah, that's how it went, you know? And there was just a bevy of you know, and I can't
we
stop hearing
know.
That now.
We know.
Yeah, we do know.
Yeah, I feel like kind of where I grew up, like somehow that Midwestern Wisconsin, Michigan, like Midwest thing kind of skips over some of Colorado and just lands smack dab on the western slope of Colorado.
Right.
Like I grew up, I say ope.
Yeah.
I definitely do. I'm an Oper.
Yeah.
OPE for life, yo.
Yeah.
Yeah, just like, oh, sorry. You drop something, you run into someone, you are surprised by something. Oh. Totally. Constantly. And I don't know where we got that. Like, my folks.
Transplants.
My parents are, my whole family are Colorado people, you know, we've been
but they didn't start there. I mean, they were a whole different group of people on the way
so I wonder where why people choose to settle in what kinds of places is always interesting to me, to like study the movements of people in the diaspora. Like, why aren't there more black people in Denver? Why are there not more, you know, people of color in Colorado in general? Like, there's a reason for it. It doesn't just happen, you know. There are reasons for it, because people of ambition and talent, they will follow opportunities wherever they are. So if there's a noticeable gap of a certain type of person in an area, like, those things don't just happen.
No.
Like, why did they happen?
Conspiracy.
Well, you know, I think maybe some legislation by some white folks might have had something to do with it. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's pretty obvious, but that's kind of everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, it is sad. You can look at redlining policies all over the place. And they mirror so much of each other. And it's just, you know, it's really incredible that white people all over the place had these parallel tracks of thought that so closely, you know, mirrored each other. Like, really, what a...
Yeah. Well, you know, and it's funny. I was thinking about this. I just said, you know.
You know,
it's funny. He got his tractor caught in the mud and then,
whoop.
But I was thinking about this just the other day, how I was driving down the street and I saw an Indian man, and, you know, he had a mustache and thick black hair. And it occurred to me, I've never seen a redheaded Indian man.
We're talking like Southeast Asian Indian?
Yeah.
Okay.
And
I wasn't sure if you were racist or not.
Well, not because of that. If I am, it's, and I am working on it.
No, but he was redheaded?
No, he wasn't.
Oh.
That's what I was thinking. That's what I thought would be interesting. But then it occurred to me that I've never seen that. And it made me think about it a little bit more. And then I started thinking about all of the other ethnicities that don't have, you know, the variances of degrees that we seem to, and yet the white people are so strange about white people stuff. And that just boggles my mind, because there's so much diversity within just this one subset.
Right.
It's like people go, we got enough, and they just quit, like, right there. It's
well,
like,
it's an easy delineation to make, and so I think simple-minded people will gladly make it. Like, there's lots of, but also like it is a lot of those white people that settled in Europe way back in the day. They did have prejudices against each other.
Well, yeah.
And the necessity, I mean, in America, like, the Irish beat those and... out of them. And then eventually, like, we're all white folk. Yeah. I guess some of us have brown hair and right. some of us have more reddish, pinkish tones. Yeah. And some of us, you know.
I don't like you, but I don't like that guy more. I don't know what that guy's up to, so... I guess we'll stick together now.
It's sadly human nature, I feel like. Yeah. And I think as we expand our minds as a species, as one race, we will see less and less of that. Or it'll just, like how, you know, everybody used to hate each other in Europe or whatever, and then they were like, we're white though. Yeah, let's band together. And then like it'll be like, but we're North Americans though, you know?
Yeah.
We're like, but we got something over here. You know, just and then eventually it'll get so simplified that none of it will matter anymore.
Yeah.
You know? I hope. Well, I mean, crossing my fingers. Speaking from a place of privilege. We're always going to find reasons
to be tribal about things. I mean, tribalism isn't going to go away anytime soon.
But also,
we'll probably find different reasons to be tribal.
I don't think that all tribalism is a bad thing. No. And in fact, I think that is our natural state in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean exclusivity. And we certainly can't do ethnic tribes anymore. It just doesn't make geographical or, you know, sociological sense in
the
any
world
way.
Is too
but
small.
Like, but if you've ever read any Daniel Quinn, he talks about tribes a lot, and he talks about them as our natural state. Like, you know, whales go in pods, and horses go in herds, and humans grew up evolutionarily. Is that a word? Sure.
In tribes,
that's how we did it. In bands of, in groups of, and the word for it is tribe, but you could say a pod or a murder or a pride or, however you want to call it. Like, we function as groups. Mm-hmm. And so the challenge is now for this new society that is global and is all up in each other's faces digitally, how do we create tribes that make sense for what we're doing now?
Yeah.
His solution in the book is like, find people to build something with. The idea is that a tribe is made up of people who all add something into the pot to make the pot bigger, so now they can take out of it.
Right.
You know, like, everybody puts in a skill, and now the group is able to do something more that it couldn't do before without that skill, and it expands, and now there's a little bit of the pie. I expanded the pie, and now I can take my slice of the pie.
See, and the thing is, I really, like, in my heart, I love the idea of that. But in my head, I have to fight the cynicism of, you know, knowing that there are people out there with the tendency to see a situation like that and go, well, I know what I put in, but what the fuck is that guy doing?
Right, group projects.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Man, yeah, that's
people
tough.
Having that false
I definitely
sense
hate
of...
group projects, because in school I definitely did more than my fair share. Often. But then every once in a while I was the one that was like, you know what, I'm sitting this one out. You guys do it. I know you weren't the ones that screwed me over before specifically, but you don't know how hard I work sometimes, so I'm just going to not this time.
Peace!
Put my name on it. I guess, yeah, everybody has a moment.
Yeah.
So now we're talking about sociology. That's like different than psychology.
Yes.
It's different than mental health.
But it is different than mental health.
It's just
health.
A step or two up on the macro scale, maybe?
Well, it is all still part of the overall fabric of thought. And sociology is a really interesting one, because sociology can directly impact various things that a person with mental illness might go through. It can exacerbate sociological conditions can exacerbate mental illness greatly.
Yeah, it's that the group mind and the group reaction to a person, to an individual. Ooh.
So
mob mentality.
Let's talk about something more fun. So what made you decide that you wanted to do comedy? Like, I don't want to get into the stereotype of the sad clown.
I have a question for you.
Okay.
Why did you think that a comedian would make a great mental health podcast person? Like, I feel like I get tapped for this sort of thing often in various different ways, not always necessarily a podcast. But, like, why is it that society thinks that comedians have some sort of tap on mental health?
Right. Well, I mean, to be fair, there's the sad clown stereotype. That one's pretty
easy. Yeah, I literally had a dude. We make fun of him, me and the bartenders over there, still to this day, call him Twisty Stash. And he made me so mad at High Dive. We're on South Broadway at Sexpot Studios right now. And so right across the street from us is the wonderful dive bar venue. High Dive, and this dude sat there and told me that he knows comedians and that all comedians are depressed,
right,
are suffering from depression. And I was like, fuck you, dude. You don't know me.
Yeah.
I am a human being and I have my ups and downs, but
sure,
I do not think that the struggle that quote-unquote struggle that I go through with my downtimes is depression.
No.
Like, and I would not... it would hurt my soul to say that I'm depressed, knowing how it affects other people's lives. It's like saying, like, oh, I'm starving, but like you're like, you ate 3 hours ago.
Right, exactly.
I'm peckish.
Yes,
I'm like peckish, but for depression.
No, here's why I thought that. I thought that because even if you don't have any sort of personal mental illness yourself.
Oh, yeah, I'm perfect.
Chances are very good that it has affected your life in some way.
Oh, yeah.
Either through other people or, you know, friends, family, people.
I mean,
that
have you heard me talk about my mother on other things? Okay, so you had a clue. Okay.
Yeah, I did have a clue. But I also don't want to presume that that's the area we're going to go down.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's lots of other things with me.
Well, the thing about the stand-up comedian being a sad clown, I definitely don't agree with it. I think that it's a stereotype for a reason, because a lot of people are. But I also think that stereotypes are just caricatures. They're not a
full
formed
idea. Well, we have to
look
at the reason why the stereotype exists. Like, because there are examples, sure. But why do people get that way? Like, what is the circumstances that bring them to that spot? And I think it's intrinsic to what comedians do.
Yeah,
we look at things,
mm-hmm,
and then even the first take is not enough. You're like, oh, everybody's seen it this way before. I need to take a step to the side and look at it this way. And sometimes, I've been in the business for a long time, so everybody's had that dick pic take or whatever.
Yeah.
You got to step one step further out and look at it from that angle. And
yeah,
then you keep doing that. And before you know it, you've got like this three-dimensional image, and it's still just your perception, you know, your hot takes. But like, you've got this really in-depth image on the subject matter.
Yeah.
And we tear things to pieces that way. And we ourselves are not exempt from that.
Right.
So I think self-awareness is a huge part of what a comedian is, what an artist is, you know, like an unaware artist is not really doing much, right? Like they could only be parroting back what society already has told them.
I know I worked out my first hour thinking about just trying to work through some shit. Like, that was...
Did it help?
Yeah, it definitely did, but I had to jettison 40 minutes of it.
Sure.
Because it was so specific that it was like, so everybody's been broken down on the side of the highway crying to Knights in White Satin, right, guys? No, this really worked in the other room that had my ex-girlfriend in it. She cried. Like, but then you got, I had to work a bunch of stuff out, and then I learned a bunch of things about myself that I didn't want to know.
And then
I had to be better.
Them?
No, of course not, because I didn't want to realize that I was the...
Comedy will point out your flaws.
Yeah.
It will point out every flaw you have.
Well, I found out I was an emotional terrorist.
Really?
I didn't want to know that about myself. But then as soon as I figured it out, it was like, oh, I don't want to be like that. Like,
so what did you do about it?
I owed some people some apologies is what I did about it. I realized.
And stand-up comedy did that for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's interesting.
100%. Yeah, because I went back and listened to... I went back and listened to the hour
You
like a
listened
year later.
To yourself.
I did. Oh, yeah. See, this is how you know I wasn't meant for it. Because I actually listened to it, and I thought, that's pretty good. And and then I went back to it a year later and went, oh, my God, I'm so embarrassed. And
but you got better in that
I
year. You had to have, or else you wouldn't think that your old shit was crap.
Oh, no, it was
man,
so bad.
My shit is crap.
Well, I didn't get better until I started bombing. And when I started bombing, I started getting really good.
Yes.
Well, okay, I thought I was getting really good because I knew that I could go back to those same rooms where I was bombing at and do better. And it was like,
I think you could say...
I got five guys at Three Kings to laugh. I think I know what I'm doing.
Still, though, that is a victory. And I think maybe instead of saying, man, I'm getting really good, you can say, man, I'm the best I've ever been.
Yes, precisely.
I like telling myself that, like... Yeah. Like, because I know I'm going to hate whatever I'm doing probably in a week.
Yeah.
Oh, I should write a new joke. Fuck. Yeah, I don't know. Comedy, man. Whatever. Yeah. Pretty cool.
So you don't, you don't work stuff out, like, on stage? You don't go through things on stage?
I definitely go through things on stage. To say that I do not would be stupid. Yeah. Like, I know that I am oftentimes a raw nerve on stage. Mm-hmm. Somebody else that I admire very much basically called me that in one of his podcasts when I came up.
Nice.
And I was like, the way he said it sounded like a compliment, so I'm going to take it. But I know that I can be a raw nerve, and it's really hard for me to... keep how I'm feeling about myself and about how the set is going specifically out of the mic.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Like, the second that I think I'm bombing, it sounds like I am.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty easy to get in your own head.
Ooh, yeah. But it happens without me even
feels
like
2 minutes.
Like, I'm doing it, I'm getting in my own head at the back of my mind.
Yeah.
I'm still, like, telling the jokes and, like, being like, oh, and this is what happens now. But at the same time, I'm like, do those people hate me? Well, that group didn't laugh. Man, do you always have to make your body so angly? Like, oh, you're crouching again. You're fucking crouching again. No wonder that punchline didn't land.
Yeah.
You already did that body motion. Stop repeating yourself. There's, like, this whole other dialogue that can be really hard to shush.
Yeah.
And what I've been telling myself lately is, like, you know what? This is not the time for notes. Like, just telling that to myself. Like, this is not the time for notes. Like, even if it's awkward or hard or you're bombing, live in that moment.
Yeah.
Because it's not going to get better if you are on the audience's side in hating you.
Yeah, let them do that.
Yeah, they've got this covered.
They're going to do enough of that for you, especially if you're
that
not.
That being said, I've
working.
Been having some really good sets lately where I feel just more comfortable and more free to explore within my old material, which because I haven't written new shit that I really like in a really long time. So, which is, man, we could get in the psychology of that. Fuck.
Are you afraid of letting go of the old bits if they're working?
I don't know if afraid is the right word, but it's just like, if they are working, then, you know, like, like, I haven't like recorded a 20. All of my stuff is fair game. It's not like I've retired anything.
Yeah.
You know, I've never recorded anything really. Like, you know, on an album or a thing I would then release to the public. Outside of YouTube, you know? That being said, some of my jokes are like 4 years old.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. They're... But I have been doing a lot more sets in front of people that have never seen me before. And it's interesting to get to still develop those jokes into better and better jokes because it's not just at open mics where everybody's fucking heard it, you know? Yeah. And you get to like start to put a whole set together where you find a flow and you're like, okay, I know these jokes work, but last time I did it, they weren't really ready for me to like punch at that feminist stuff quite so early. need to save it for a little bit later, pick and choose or whatever. And, you know, like, I can be a harpy on stage. I harp on shit, but also like the mythological like beast lady who's like, I can harpy on people, and I know that I can. And so you just kind of have to read your audience and be like, are you going to go with me on what I want to talk about, what I want to say?
Yeah.
You know, like, or do you just need a chuckle fest? And I need to get better as a comic at being able to offer them the chuckle fest when that's what they're telling me they want, you know?
Right.
When, you know, like, because you never know what somebody's day was like.
Yeah.
Sitting in the audience, you know, maybe she's like a lawyer who works on civil rights cases all day long.
Yeah.
Or, you know, or she's like defending a rape victim or something. Oh, defending as if the rape victim was on.
Well,
whoa, that was,
she did steal somebody's car, but then he caught her and raped her. So
well,
it's a
I guess
bit
it
of a
speaks
bag.
To how it feels like it's always the woman that's on trial when she's the fucking victim slash defendant.
Yeah.
Or not defendant, fucking lawsuit bringer. Ah.
All right.
But you never know what their day job is, where they're coming from, what kind of thing that they want. Maybe they just want to turn it off and have a good time. Like, they just fought the good fight for 12 hours. Like, let them have a chuckle. There's nothing wrong.
They bought drinks and chicken fingers.
Right. There's nothing wrong with super lighthearted comedy. And sometimes, as a feminist, I feel like it's pushed onto me that I have to be pushing my case all the time.
Yeah.
And it's like, sure, if feminist were my job and the job that I was seeking and the title that I wanted people to recognize me for right out the gate, yes, then I would need to be doing that. But I'm a comedian, and that's how I'm presenting myself. I'm presenting as comedian, and you are not acknowledging that.
But you can do both. I mean, there's, and you definitely
but
do.
But I need to be able to shift more into that chuckle area.
Yeah.
Is how I feel as a performer and an artist. I need to be able to fulfill that need in audiences. And sometimes I let them down. Sometimes I let them down that way.
Well, I and that's kind of the tough thing. I mean, it sounds like you've got your empathy on lock. It's like recognizing that thing about an audience and delivering to them what it is they need versus being up there and, you know, why aren't they giving me what I need?
Right. That's not their job. They're paying you.
Exactly.
Or, I mean, you hope so.
You hope they're paying
ideally.
You.
Ideally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really interesting thought. You know, that's something that I find is generally pretty lacking in a lot of people anymore anyway, is that it seems like we're getting a larger and larger empathy gap every year. And I think that it has a lot to do with us isolating ourselves through technology. Technology brought us together, and then it started to tear us apart.
I think that is the reason for that is that so much of technology is asking you to constantly tell it and tell the world, the digital world, who you are.
Yeah.
What's your story? What are you like? What are, like, everybody's so focused on what their story is.
Yeah.
So that they can push out the content onto these platforms that I don't think empathy is lacking or it's any less than it used to be, but people aren't seeing the world with that skill because that's not what they're focused on. They're focused on themselves and what their story is.
Possibly. I mean, I think that I don't know. I don't know if I believe that people's capacity for empathy is diminished. I don't think that's the case, but I definitely think that people have put empathy on more of a back burner than it used to be. And I don't think that it's even necessarily just, you know, shitty people. I think it's kind of everybody.
Well, yeah. Well, we're more connected and we know more about the world than ever before. And it is really, I get empathy overload sometimes, honestly.
Yeah.
You know, like if I just break down in the middle of my day thinking about how a whole generation of children in Syria have never been to school, don't even know what school is.
Yeah.
I'm not going to get through my day. I'm tearing up just, you know, like that's, you know.
Yeah.
But also, like, you know, my boyfriend broke his arm or whatever. Yeah. Like, he didn't. But, you know, like, yeah. There's only...
But he might. I mean, you know.
He could, and I worry about it every day. No. No, that was a stupid example compared to Syrian children. But, like, my point is that I can't constantly empathize for everyone all the time. So if I'm short with a customer service agent or, you know, mean to someone on the bus... because I don't like them. Yeah. If I just don't like someone for no good reason, I don't know.
Well, I mean, you know, sometimes you gotta just let shit go, and you can't really think about it over and over again.
Right.
It's something you just gotta let go. But there are certain times where I feel like we could all try to be a little better to each other.
Yeah.
And it just seems like there's a lot less of it, but. You know, I'm also pretty raw about things because I tend to take things like very personally. And so, you know, it's like I have a hard time calling my mother because it's like, you know, well, I mean, you did vote for a Nazi. I mean,
Mama.
You know, and then it's like she's like, well, you know, we just see this differently, and I'm like, you're probably right.
Yes, but, we obviously do.
Yeah, you know, and I have difficulty with things like that, and so it's like I'll still call my mom, and I usually find myself having to like I use that as my barometer for when I've had enough. It's like I haven't called my mom in a month. I should probably give her a call and just check in and, you know, kind of re-engage and learn how to talk to somebody that I disagree with. Because you have to talk to people you disagree with. And if I'm going to do that, you know, my mom's a good place to be. Because that's easy. It's
right,
your mom.
Because you love them.
Yeah, exactly.
Because at the end of the day, I'm
willing to open the door on that a lot easier than I am with a lot of other people. Because most people, I'm like, you know, they say something bad about... I don't know, Star Wars. And I'm like, fuck you.
yeah.
But I don't even really care about that. You just start finding yourself in these situations. I say you because I'm talking about myself.
Of course.
But I witness people all over the place on the internet and out in public just... behaving in strange ways.
It used to be more antisocial ways.
Yeah, it used to be more on the internet, less in public, and now it seems like there's more of it in public, and I don't mean to get all doomsday about it, because I still think that technology is going to be fine. I think young people are handling it a lot better
than
people
so too.
My age and older.
I think so, too.
So that's a silver lining, I guess, is that someday I'll die and someone better will be there.
Well, I mean, honestly, that's the most humans could ever really hope for.
Yeah.
Is to just leave someone better in their place.
Yeah.
And if you're not going to have kids, then leave a better community in your
right.
place. You know?
Exactly. And if you're not going to leave better people, you get a vasectomy.
That's just fine, too.
Yeah. That's good for everyone involved, really.
Honestly. Yeah. Okay, so I never answered your question, though.
No.
Why I got into comedy.
Yeah.
That was because I turned it around on you early
did.
On.
You did, but I'm going to turn it back around on you.
Oh, with a different question or the same?
With a different question.
Gotcha.
Yeah, with a different question. Because okay. I think that why you got into comedy is because you're funny.
I like that.
That's
you know, I honestly...
easy.
Didn't really know that I was as funny as I was, am, currently still, until I started doing comedy.
Did that change with your friends? Like, did you go from being the funny friend to being...
I'm still not the funny friend.
No?
No. No. Like in high school, I'm more the person that sits back and watches, mm-hmm. whatever, and then I take it to the stage.
Do you write your bits out like really well thought out before you do them, or do you write out ideas?
I used to, and now I write out more ideas, and then you take those to an open mic and you try it out and you work it into something.
I was going to say, because your brain, something. The way that you talk about things, you've got that science brain that tells me that you're a thinker. And so
I'm a muller. Yeah. It's not like I even think about things. It's just like, I got a little sand in the back of my brain and my mind's just mulling it over till it spits out a pearl. And then I'm as surprised by it as anyone else usually.
Yeah. But you still have to get on stage and show people that you made a pearl.
Yeah. And sometimes you think it's a pearl and they're like, freshwater at best.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah. I remember I had this bit that I thought was really great because I had written it 5 minutes before the New Faces contest across the street at the bar. And, and I did it on stage thinking this is going to destroy. Cause at the time I still thought, well, don't do your best stuff, write something new and make that good. Cause I was an idiot. That's why. And so I wrote this bit and I thought it was going to kill. And I don't know what the hell I was thinking, but I was thinking I was going to write a clean 5 minutes to hit a broad room. And I wrote this clean 5 minutes and realized pretty quickly it was only clean because there were no swear words.
And I think I said
some kind of a abortion joke, and I locked eyes with a grandmother who just went, no.
Yes.
And that ruined it for me. Ooh. I got off stage and Deacon came up to me. Deacon Gray came up to me and he looked at me and he said, where was the good 5 minutes? And I said, I thought I'd write a new one. And he just nodded and walked away.
Not the first time he's seen it. Certainly not the last.
Yeah. Well, because he talked to me the first time I did Comedy Works for the thing. He came up to me and he said, I really like your stuff. And I was like, oh, I'm good. I've arrived.
Yeah.
And then he was like, you should do the New Faces, and here's how you get in and do that. And I was like, awesome. Yeah, right on. So I went, and I was like, well, he's not going to want to see he's not going to want to see that again.
Oh, no. No, you should have done that exact same thing.
I should have done the exact same thing, because it was crushing everywhere I went. It was like my best. It was the stuff I wrote after my relationship material.
Once you got it all out of your system.
Yeah. And so it was my best 5 minutes, and I threw it out the window thinking that's what I should be doing. And that was not what I should have been
doing.
What
are you, crazy?
And I should have known, because I say I wrote it across the street right before the contest, but the truth is I was rewriting it because I had been doing it around town for 2 months.
And it hadn't been working.
And it was not working.
Yeah.
And I was like, I wonder why this isn't working.
Let me quickly fix it and take it to Comedy Works.
Yeah. And I thought, oh, I got this. I figured it out.
Oh, the hubris of man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Women don't do that shit. We think about things first. Yeah, right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
I could tell a million stories about things that I did wrong. There's a girl somewhere in Denver that I still wish I remembered her name, because the very first open mic that I did here was, I did Three Kings after I moved here from Michigan. I did Three Kings, and I was super nervous, and because the room was comedians all with their arms crossed.
Oh, yeah, sitting like 70 feet away from you.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. And so I was like, Jesus, this is going to be hard. And then so this girl went up, and she was less stand-up and more like sketch improv. Okay. And she was really funny. She had this really great material that nobody was laughing at. And so I was sitting right up front trying to be helpful. And so I was laughing and clapping and doing everything I thought I was supposed to do. And then she ended, her closer was that she was doing, and you might even know this person. I hope you do.
I already have a couple names to ask you if it was.
I don't know her name. That's the problem.
Well.
Her closer was a raptor.
Yeah, I know it!
and it's Haley five
Driscoll.
Stages. Okay, Haley Driscoll. Yes, yes. Okay. So
I love her. She is the most creative mind. God damn.
I loved her too, and I thought she was great. And then, so Nathan pulls me up to the stage. It's my turn next, and then I thought it would be funny if I pretended I had the exact same bit. And so I was looking at my notes, and I said, and I started with saying I was going to do a raptor in the five stages of grief, but like I think it landed like I was making fun of her.
Sure.
And but I wasn't. I was trying to make it look like, oh, we wrote the same thing.
Oh,
and now
shit.
I gotta throw this away.
Incredibly original and awesome piece.
Yes.
What parallel tracks? Weird, huh?
Yeah, and that's why I thought it was funny. I thought there's all like it's funny, and
yeah,
then, but she did not think it was funny, and I could see the look on her face, like "fuck you, guy," and I was like, I wanted to find her afterward and say, "I'm so sorry,
Haley Driscoll, if you're listening, he was trying to compliment you
and did not do it at all.
Well, he was an idiot, and he's sorry."
Yeah, and I'm still both of those things, but for different reasons.
Oh yeah, she's super funny.
But that's what I liked about my little brief journey through stand-up comedy for a couple of years was that it really made me think about other people a lot.
Yeah. Well, you have to try to perceive yourself through somebody else's eyes.
Yeah.
And not just anybody else's eyes. A lot of people's eyes all at once. And people who you will probably, fingers crossed, never meet.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, just, no, I'm a kid. I don't mind meeting people after shows and stuff. But like,
no, I'll cut
as
that
a
out.
Whole, it's kind of like just better if like you don't. Like, yeah. And they stay the audience in your mind.
Yeah.
They're just this faceless mess called
just
the
an
audience.
Amorphous blob,
yeah,
of chuckles.
But yeah, you have to really face yourself. You have to face how other people see you, which is such a difficult thing, I think, for most people to do in their lives. It's like such a difficult journey, a journey of mindfulness.
Yeah,
all trying to reach the enlightenment that is being like, I know who I am. And so much of the way that humans' minds, because we did grow up in tribes,
yeah,
is about the community. How do I fit in here? What is my function here? How do you perceive me?
Yeah.
Am I doing okay? You know, yeah, like, and so I have a lot of admiration for the people who legitimately are like, I do not care.
Yeah.
I already know who I am. I don't need your validation or opinion or feedback on it.
Yeah.
I am good. And when those people actually are good, oh, that is such a beautiful thing to watch.
Right.
Like just this person that's like, ah. There's a lady here in town. I love her. Her name is Rue Johnson. She has a production company called Rue Black, I think it's called.
Mm-hmm.
Does a lot of hip hop and events coordinating, and is just an amazing, and writing, and she's just a really cool lady. But like, she does not need anybody. She knows exactly who she is.
Yeah.
And she is also pretty honest about like the times where she's like, today was a trip, y'all. I was off my balance and I was not there. And like, that's part of it too. Like, I don't know, in Zen philosophy, you don't ever, you know, like, you reach enlightenment, that Sartori moment, but you're not supposed to stay there in,
yeah,
perfect Zen. You're supposed to have that knowledge, like download that knowledge, and then come back into the world and exist here in this imperfect realm.
Yeah.
As that being, with full knowledge of like who you are and what, like the Buddha that you are. You,
yeah,
know, like, oh, what am I? Which one am I? And there's an infinite number of Buddhas.
Yeah.
Like, which one are you? Who are you in this grand tribe that we have that is the universe? Oh, man, well, I shouldn't have smoked that weed.
Well, when you're taking all of this information in and trying to turn yourself into a person with the information that you've been given, there are times where you can be hit with an overload of things, and then it's really dependent on you to figure out how to process that so that you can move forward.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you're just stuck in a moment and the rest of your life can be falling apart. Like yeah. when you did that that stuff with Chappelle,
sure.
Like you take something like that in, and of course, you know, he had nothing but complimentary things to say about you.
Yeah.
And
every other time I've met him since then, like, it's been like a short nod. He does not give a shit. That was not a moment in his life, even though it was for me so much. You know what? I just turned my brain off that night because I was like, if I think about this for even just a moment, I'm a flip and I'm going to be awkward. And that is not what I... So I didn't talk to him backstage. Mm-hmm. I like didn't even go into the green room at all.
Right.
So when we came back out to host between every comic, that was the only time I interacted with him the whole night.
Yeah.
Like, wasn't part, like, other people were back there, like, smoking cigarettes or that thing, like, partying in the green room. And I was like, I've got a job to do.
Right.
And he's drunk and stoned. I'm going to have to rein him in.
Yeah.
Constantly. And it was so much fun. God, I would rein in that circus. Like, because he is so good at what he does, I looked amazing that night.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you're good at what you do as well, so I wouldn't downplay
Thank
that.
Thank you. But that was also, like, what, like 3-4 years ago now?
Yeah.
Like, so, like, I wasn't even, I'm twice as far into comedy now as I was then. So, like, man, he made me look spectacular. He set me up for success.
But even with a moment like that, When you have something like that, that's you know, extraordinary from what, say, you know, a lot of other...
Oh, that doesn't happen people. To everyone all
exactly.
the time. Yeah.
So that's an extraordinary giant moment that happens to you, and then you have that, and then I imagine you couldn't even process it until after it happened.
Right, and then by the time I even got around to processing it, it didn't matter anymore.
Yeah, and
like
that's
a month
the thing.
Later,
when
I was like, "Holy shit, did that happen?" Like nobody gave a shit anymore.
Yeah, exactly, because you still got to wake up in the morning and
pay my phone bill.
Yeah, exactly. It's like you've got this great moment, and it's like, what do I do with it? It's not.
Nah,
it's,
there
it's
is
not
nothing.
A lottery ticket.
There
it's
is
not
nothing
a job
to
it's,
be done.
Yeah, all you can do is appreciate it for what it was, and then
get back to work.
And get back to work.
At the same exact stuff that brought you to that point in the first place.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Because that'll afford you more moments in life that make you happy. Not necessarily on
you,
that
you know
level
what it
for
is?
Other people,
it's,
but...
Moments like that, they're not... They are worth something.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They're fuel for the gas tank as great comic Phil Palisall said and probably stole from someone because it's so good. But it's fuel for the gas tank. It was rocket fuel for the gas tank. And I was like, I held my own.
Yeah.
You know, granted, like he really did set me up for success, but like I held my own and I did my job. That's what it was more than anything that I was excited about. I did my job. I stayed level headed. I didn't get starstruck. Mm-hmm. I zinged him a couple times, you know, like I got my shots in where I could, you know, a little weak left hook or whatever. but yeah, it's fuel for the gas tank, and whatever doubts I was having about my ability were at least put on the shelf.
Yeah.
Like we'll examine them later.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll have to get to it, but, we're going to do that later.
Yeah.
You got some gas.
I mean, moments like that are good for visiting, but you can't live there.
Yeah. Oh, no. Yeah. Yeah, no.
And that's the thing that's so crazy about a lot of people might have a moment like that and see it as, like, what can I do with this? How can I turn this into something? How can I make this a thing? Like, they would just latch on to it as if it's...
Well, that's,
you know,
only if you're
I
happy
need this to save my
riding
life.
Someone's coattails.
Yes.
And I think most artists that are worth their salt don't want to do that.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I will if I got to, but...
Yeah.
But, like, I that would not be the thing I would want to be known for or introduced as, you know, it certainly wasn't like Dave Chappelle picked me out of the crowd and I can actually like use it for a credit.
Yeah.
But like, it was nice to be respected in the eyes of my peers.
Yeah.
You know, that's good.
But see, this is exactly what I'm talking about with you having a presence of mind about things. And I have to imagine that growing up in the circumstance that you did, that being very present is something that didn't necessarily come natural to you, but something that was thrust upon you.
Yeah, I would say that's pretty perceptive. I vacillated in my life as a youth between being total dreamland, like not there, somewhere else in my mind,
mm-hmm.
and being hyper present.
Yeah.
And it was because of my circumstances. My mom was schizophrenic, had dissociative identity disorders, so multiple personalities. And so you had to deal with fresh new realities much more quickly.
Yeah.
And navigating that, you know, became second nature. But then I also think because of some of that stuff and then other mitigating things in my childhood, there was also a tendency for me to disassociate and be like and live in my imagination and be daydreamy.
How old were you when your mom started presenting?
I guess I would have been like 10, 11, 12. See, like that's what I mean by like it's hard for me to pinpoint the year. I could
Well, I think most people have a hard time head, but with like
yeah,
that 10, kind
11,
of age frame.
Something like that. Yeah, maybe yeah 9, 10 feels like a good round number for when that started coming up. But like even before then it was a problem, you know, like like, but we just didn't know what it was. We were just like, mom's moody. Boys, man, women, am I right? one of the things my mom used to say before we found out what she was going through is like, do you ever have an argument with yourself and lose? And like, I feel most people would be like, yeah, of course, you know, I talk myself out of something or whatever, you know, but it's not what she was saying. Like she was literally losing arguments to herself. Like, no, but you guys, but wait, but okay, I guess we'll do it your way. You know, like that's what she was dealing with. but yeah, she's had a really good sense of humor about her own trauma and then the way and a good sense of humor about the way that her brain and psyche chose to deal with that trauma.
Yeah.
My mom's a pretty great woman in a lot of ways and she annoys me to no end. I love her deeply. God damn it, mom. You are so embarrassing. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I guess I would think that would definitely be something that if I was going to try to draw a line from that situation and that that time period to the way that you're able to handle yourself on stage, I could draw a line between those things because from what I see, and this is just purely outsider speculation, is you look at a situation like that and you think that there are all of these unknown variables, especially with a person who is experiencing them inside themselves full of unknowns.
Right.
And then taking care of children who are also dealing with, I don't know what kind of mom I'm getting right now. Mm-hmm. And to be in that situation, it was just as confusing for her as was for you. Everybody's in at least some level of chaos. And so it would tend to make you think quicker about situations. And especially a lot of times when
I never really thought about it like
when
that
someone
before.
Starts to think about, you know, things that have happened to them, there's typically a few different ways you can go. If you really look into why something is happening and you try to tear a situation apart and put it back together in a way that makes sense, almost like you're solving the things that happen to you like a Rubik's cube, as
solving hindsight the Rubik's detective
cube. Yeah. As if solving it is going to make your feelings about it change. but it doesn't. You can learn some things, but it doesn't make it go away as soon as you solve the puzzle.
Yeah.
So to take those pieces and to try to, you know, spend all of that time figuring things out for years, it makes sense that it would sharpen your brain to pull things apart.
Right.
And then that's what
Man,
a good comedian does.
How good do you think Columbo or Jessica Fletcher would be at stand-up comedy? Holy shit! They'd be so good.
I don't know.
I'm like, this is getting too deep. Better make a joke.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Columbo would be good at it.
Oh, he'd be... Oh, he wouldn't even know. He'd be the kind of comic where he got up on stage and he'd, like, legitimately not know why people were laughing. And
oh, yeah.
People would be crying laughing.
Yeah, I feel like he probably could have hit the stage and...
Jessica Fletcher would probably be, like, too sharp and witty for people, and they wouldn't laugh. And then years later, they'd be like, she was amazing. And
joke grenades is what she would throw out there. People will laugh later.
Yeah. That's great.
So you not having the sad clown tendencies yourself. I mean, other than what normal people have,
right.
the ups and downs, you know. So if something bad happens to you, you're going to feel like shit about it. Of course, but you know, you're not running around bipolar and mania or anything like that.
No, I'm not. I wish I could have a little more mania sometimes. At least then I'd get some shit done.
Yeah, exactly.
I wish I could have selective mania where I'm like, this is the week. Yes.
So do I.
But then I guess, you know, there are the consequences, which are the inevitable lower lows.
Yeah.
So I don't really want to deal with that. I guess I'll just plod along at my normal person pace.
Yeah. Ugh. But I'm curious about your relationship to other human beings, because
they're terrible. I'm bad at it.
No. Well, yeah, obviously. I mean, you talk about your genitals to strangers. That's so.
That is true.
Yeah,
that is true.
I mean, if you were good with people, you'd probably be doing something else.
No, I am pretty good with people. I just have a limit to it.
No.
I have a limit to how long I can be around them before I'm like, I'm out. I'm tapped out.
Yeah.
Now I'm just short and I have no sentences for you.
Yeah.
I'll just shrug my shoulders at you. I don't know. I'm done.
But that whole situation of taking yourself through life from there to here, and now, do you have patience for people who have fucked up things in front of you, like after having witnessed something? I guess I'm just curious about it.
I think it's impossible for people to have experienced trauma without then having empathy, unless something broke in their mind during the trauma.
Yes.
And now they're
okay.
Like that's totally different.
Yeah.
But I think most people who have come out the other side of a trauma, at any level of health, whether it's even just a sliver of it, they have empathy for unknown situations.
Yeah.
And a lot of times they have more humor than people that haven't been through trauma.
Yes.
Because they have to. I think a lot of times it's what keeps our brains from breaking during a trauma or traumatic anything. You know, it's like, it's why oftentimes the women, you know, like women have different conversations, same as men when they're by themselves than when they're in mixed company.
Sure.
I don't know how many hilarious rape jokes I've heard from women. But they've all been survivors of something like that.
But there's also a context to something
right,
like that.
And it's in conversation. And then when they say the devastatingly funny thing, it's amongst people that they know and trust in, and it is a safe space, you know, like that's why it's hard to talk about safe spaces in comedy, because it's like, well, you don't know who the audience is and what kind of safe space they need. Maybe they're a woman who suffered trauma who needs to hear this shit.
Yeah.
You know, or maybe the exact opposite of that. Like, how do you know as a performer, and how do you, as like a venue person, you know, I run a tiny little room, like, and we put up about 200 shows a year. And it's like, you know, I've been called upon to make a stand on how to create safe spaces for women in comedy. And I don't know what the answer is. I don't know how to approach that, because audiences are so varied and their needs are myriad. Mm-hmm. And how am I supposed to, as one person with her own biases, suss out what any given audience needs? There are some things I know I can do to encourage the room to go in a certain direction.
Sure.
And I'm doing those that I can right now, and I'm working towards others. But like, how do you anyhow, women are funny and our rape jokes are hilarious.
When you're putting those jokes together, is that a thing where when you're putting them together, you'll think about wanting to make sure that you're presenting yourself a certain way so that when people hear you saying things, they will infer a context by who you're telling them that you are.
Mm. That's more complicated, and I think like that is like an expert level thing. Like to maneuver what you just said would be amazing for any comic, regardless, someone who's only 8 years in. Also, I don't have any rape jokes.
Right.
I don't.
Well, and I wasn't meaning to say that you do.
You know, I just wrote this thing, but it's like telling women to force men to eat their vaginas, basically. Like, if I really like put it as bluntly as possible, just like taking head, you know, not giving or receiving, you're taking. And that technically is a rape joke.
Technically it is, yeah. The,
if I'm like grabbing a guy by his short hairs and like the line is put his mouth where your money is, you know, like that is a rape joke.
Technically that is, yes.
So I don't know what the rules are.
Well, I think
solved
it.
I don't know.
I'll make sure to let all the women I know that you figured it out.
Thank you.
And, you know, now we know
I've
where the
never
lines
done
are.
That, but there are some men that I've been like, would you please? Just once. Just a little taste.
I don't know. That's there's too many DJ Khaleds out there.
Too many.
Well,
or sometimes, honestly, it's just like men think that foreplay is to like, this is going to get crude, is to get me wet. But like, and then they reach down and they're like, she's ready. And it's like, no. The foreplay is to get me to come at the same time as you do
right. In
3 to 4 minutes. Like you need to spend some time warming up the oven over here.
Yeah.
Just because the pan is greased. Oh, God. Just because the pan is greased doesn't mean we're ready for biscuits.
Yeah. You know, and maybe I don't want biscuits anymore.
Oh, man. You're like, I'm never eating biscuits again.
It's gravy.
Oh, I'm going to have to remember that. Oh, no, it's recorded for all time, so
yeah.
I'll never be able to forget that.
Exactly.
I said that.
So we'll make sure to send this to your mother.
Thank you.
I'm sure
she's never heard me tell jokes.
No?
Because any time that there has been a sliver of the chance, it's been like at a dingy bar or something. And I'm like, Mom, this is not. It's not that I don't, like, I categorize, like, categorically do not want her to see my stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
It's that, like, I don't want my very Christian, very sheltered parents to have to walk into a dingy Colfax dive bar.
Right.
Like,
and you don't know who's going to go up before you sometimes either. It's like,
and honestly, like, I think they could handle the content, but I'm not sure if they could handle the context.
Yeah, okay.
If that makes sense.
Yep.
Maybe they're cooler than I give them credit for, but they are very, very Christian. So, and I don't like necessarily curse a lot.
Yeah.
But I don't shy away from
content.
Con- my own content.
Yes.
To answer part of your question about the rape jokes, rape jokes! Just for the people out there to hear. I think
we're drawing a crowd.
Especially as a woman, if you want to breach into that territory and talk about your own perspective and viewpoints on it, and God, they better be funny still. Just like with men, they better be fucking funny if you're going to trigger other women in the audience, especially as a victim. So, like, fucking mind your footing on that. But, like, I think the way to do it is through authenticity. To be so, so honest and vulnerable. Oh, with honesty comes vulnerability. So to tell a vulnerable rape joke as a woman, like, that just puts the whole rape joke question into a different realm entirely than, like, a man popping off about something, you know, like. But also to say that, you know, that assumes that men can't also be victims, which is a whole different thing.
Right.
But yeah, I think authenticity. God, you gotta be exactly yourself in that moment.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the beautiful thing about stand-up comedy is this. It's this high wire act between authenticity and something you wrote and created.
Yeah, because you're still presenting a version.
Yeah, yeah. You're presenting the funniest version.
Yes. Hopefully.
And oftentimes that funny version also has a dark truth or a dark side, or, you know, like, you know, some comics like to dabble in the dark side of whatever that is. Some people just take a super dark thing and flip it on its head. And then some comics don't even like to. They're like, nope, we're going to keep it light. We're just having fun. We're just having a good time.
Well, you got
to
be careful, because if you're not careful, you can end up in, like, one woman show territory.
What's wrong with one woman shows?
Well, one person shows in general, and we'll stay completely gender fluid on that.
Yeah, all right.
One person shows in general tend to be.
Like, self-indulgent.
After the first 45 minutes, you go, I got it.
Like, well, my God, they shouldn't be more than 35 or 40, right? Like, we like our audiences,
well, they might,
right?
They might be 15 minutes and they feel like 45 minutes, but, you know, I've seen a few.
I do like the idea of an hour-long comedy special just basically being a one-woman show, a one-person show.
No, like, yes, perfect. That's perfect, but when you start trying to...
Wasn't that kind of what Richard Pryor did? Like, he never, like, announced his characters.
Yeah,
but
he was a
genius. He smoothly went into them.
There are very few geniuses.
It was a whole show.
Yes.
You know, like, I love one-liner comics. And I think, like, that kind of writing style is such a gift. Mm-hmm. But I can't watch 45 minutes of it without losing interest at some point, because I need a little more meat on the bones, you know? Yeah. Like, I want to be able to sink my teeth into you as a person, even if that is just an illusion or just a, it's all for show.
Yeah.
Like, I want to be able to sink my teeth into something. Even if I know, like, that's not how they really are.
Yeah.
That's fine, you know? Like, you told me a story, you gave me a whole thing. I'd rather have the whole meat and potatoes.
Yeah.
Rather than just meat.
There are certain people who do it really well. Who are able to walk that line, you know, where they're willing
the
to go.
And sometimes the jokes are just so good that you're like, all right.
Okay. Yeah. But I really love it when you can see somebody who's willing to really put it out there and willing to go a long time without a laugh for one punchline. Because that takes so much confidence and courage, right?
I've definitely been in those bits where you're like, oh, and sometimes people laugh at the little tent poles you put along the way, and then sometimes they don't, you know? And you're just like, man, this better pay off.
Yeah.
More times than not, for me, they do.
Yeah.
But there are times where you're like, no, they were not with you. You couldn't tell because they were being quiet. But well, they were not with you.
And if you look at your own evolution, which you probably should at some point if you haven't snuck a narcissistic moment to look at yourself on YouTube.
Oh, I listen to every podcast I'm on. Don't worry.
You should take a look at the evolution between there are two specific sets that I can think of that are on YouTube. And there's a 2013.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a 2014.
Oh, I think I took one of those off. I can't remember which.
And just...
Oh, God. There's also some other stuff that I can't control that I need to, like, talk to someone about and be like, you didn't have the audience mic'd, and also there were only six of them in a 70-person room, and that is living online, and would you please take my name off of it?
Don't worry. I stopped watching those out of solidarity.
Thank you. Some of them are so bad.
But that's kind of wonderful. I mean, it's all part of the tapestry of your
experience. I mean, it is wonderful until you realize that every time you submit for something or, you know, like go on an audition or, you know, whatever, people are Googling you and that's the first fucking thing they see.
Yeah. So
I need to fix it. I need to brand myself better. What's your story, Timmy? Fuck empathy. What's your story? You got to make yourself into a product that we can buy.
Well, have you thought about that?
You know, I'm just not that marketable. You know, I've tried it. I'm like strawberry milk. Like, sure, sometimes, but probably not.
I don't know. You got sort of a, like, vague Zoe Deschanel kind of stunt double.
You know,
sort of
a lot of people
on.
Have been telling me quirky librarian or like funny librarian, or librarian has come up a lot lately, which is funny because I lost my glasses in January and I've not replaced them. So it's like, where are you guys even getting this? I can't even read right now.
You can sell that. You could probably.
No, I got a quirky thing. I got a thing.
That's fun. I mean, it's fine. you've done all right.
I ain't mad at it.
You've carved out a niche for yourself. Yeah, I mean, you're certainly the only you here in town.
Yeah,
and that's not nothing. Denver's not a small town.
I am also one of those people that people from other cities come here and they're like, "You remind me of my friend. You were exactly like so and so."
Yeah,
like thank you.
That's not bad. Cool. They'll remember you.
Yeah, then call me Rachel or something. Oh, hey, Rachel. I mean, Lindsay. I mean, Randy. Was it Randy?
Tandy.
Tandy Lasky. Tandy.
Well, thanks for talking to me, Tandy Lasky.
Thanks for the coffee. This was a good time. I don't know if we delved too deep into my psyche, but...
It doesn't matter.
I did cry about kids halfway across the world, so but if that doesn't tell you enough, I don't know what will.
All right.
Well, yeah, thanks for the chat.
Thank you.
Oh, my God. Wasn't that amazing? What a really good talk. You know, I'm going to have to get a hold of Haley Driscoll, honestly. It's been one of those weird things that I've carried around for a really long time. And so, you know what? I'm going to do it. I'm going to reach out. I'm going to see how it goes. I'll report back. See how it is. Just check in with people. It's a good idea to check in with people that you might have pissed off. That's it. That's all I got for this week, everybody. Make sure you go see Timmy Lasley at the High Plains Comedy Festival at the High Dive, August 24th, motherfuckers. Go do it. And I'm going to try and heal my dumb tongue. Don't kill yourself out there.